welcome to the Retirable Podcast. I'm Mike Wallace.
My name is John Sauger.
So, John, you know, something that's happened to me this week, it's just kind of something that happens to a lot of us, and yourself included, but my mom was walking with a walker down her driveway and slipped and fell and broke her hip. You know, so
poor thing.
Yeah, no, she's had surgery. She's, you know, still in the hospital. We're actually going to be discharged today to a rehab facility. But I wanted to talk a little bit about that just because we see that happening with a lot of our clients, too. You know,
and you, the listener, maybe you, right?
Yeah.
We all age. We all experience that, right? That's part of life, I think.
Really, what happens, you know, is there's a lot of decisions that have to be made right off the bat, you know? And so a lot of it comes down to is having the plan in place and having the conversations. And so we have these conversations sometimes with our clients in general about, you know, preparing for kind of this stuff, don't we, John?
We do. And I think it's really important as we talk through this conversation, you don't necessarily want to look for an answer that you need, but you want good communication. So what I mean by that is don't just keep asking more questions until they give in and give you a good answer, right? Hey, this is why this is happening or whatnot. But you want proper communication, right? You don't want to go to a doctor and say, hey, my leg hurts, and they say that's because of your age, right? Because your other leg may not hurt, right? And they're the same age. So you don't have that as a huge issue, right? You want that doctor to say, okay, why is this happening, right? Or at least give you an explanation of why this stuff is there. Or when you're looking at housing, or when you're looking at any of those things, this happens to all of us.
Yeah.
Right. And so there are things that we might see, whether we've experienced it or not, like you're experiencing it with your mom, but it's also things we've seen and heard from of what happens a lot of this. So a financial person can be a resource, a trusted professional can be a resource during that time to say, hey, here's some of the things that have happened to other people we know, and here's things to pay attention to, or here's questions to ask, or here are things to look at.
Well, and I think it does become important, and we talk to our clients that are getting older of starting to involve, whether it's a family member or a relative, as they're aging, you know, to help with some of these decisions. And I think, as you know, because both of us have become some of the decision makers for, you know, for our family members at times. And so now it's, or maybe not me making the decisions, but helping.
Sure, being a part of it.
You know, making decisions. And so, you know, and sometimes it's an age thing, sometimes it's a health thing, right? You know,
right.
Because sometimes it's not just that they're getting elderly, but their health conditions may change, you know. I think we just wanted to talk about making sure that, you know, we have open conversations with these individuals and also just have a plan in place, you know.
Well, and again, so often when we talk about planning, one of the purposes of planning is to take emotion out of the mix, right?
Yeah.
And that's so very difficult when it's maybe your mom and something happened, or your father and something happened, or your, you know, or the kids. It's so difficult because people will love us. They want to be helpful. They want to be there, but sometimes their emotions cloud the situation. So that's so difficult. It's why a plan is so important, that a child doesn't come in and start yelling and screaming when they don't know what's even happening and they're not helpful, right? What's so difficult about this and why we talk about having a plan is the plan should try and get everybody in the same emotional spot so you can make informed decisions, right? That's what we're trying to do.
Well, and a lot of times too, when I'm having these conversations with my elderly clients, is that have a plan in place so that you're making the decisions while you're of sound mind and body.
Yep.
You know, because oftentimes if you don't, what happens is now somebody else is making those decisions for you. So this may be a decision that may be 2, 3, 5 years down the road, but if you think about it and make some of those decisions, you know, I'll give you an example. Let's say, you know, assisted living, and you may not need and be in that position yet, but, you know, while you're of sound mind and body, to go look at some facilities or do some research on some of that stuff so that if it ever gets to that point, you already have something picked out instead of, okay, you fell and now you have to go into one, right? You know?
One, and from the other side, it's a wonderful gift to be able to say, hey, we've looked at this. This is what my opinions are.
Yeah. Exactly right. It's that team approach and having that plan in general.
And you don't want to, I mean, it's a wonderful gift to say to the kids, hey, I've made this decision. You don't have to stress about it. This is what I want. You don't have to think about it. Take that off your plate, right? That's so difficult too on the other side.
No, exactly. Exactly. And also, as we know, a lot of people, you know, want to make sure that they continue with their independence. And so that is a way to be able to contribute and have some of that independence.
Absolutely. And I think, again, it's not our major subject matter today, but it is something that we experience and we share with what we experience. So often families, the money might be planned properly or maybe the estate plan. I mean, everything could be really well done, but something comes up and emotion gets involved or that part isn't planned for. I can use a personal example. We crack a joke about this. My dad's been gone almost 8 years now. And when my dad was at the later stages of life, one of the funny things was my dad had everything organized. I mean, everything. He was so well organized. One of the funny things we joked about, though, was he had a safe and the safe had a combination. And one day I said to him, I said, Dad, what's the combination for the safe? And he said, oh, it's in mom's desk drawer in the office. It's in mom's sliding desk drawer. It's taped to the side. And I said, oh, great. So that's where I'll find the combination. And he said, yeah, John, but the numbers are backwards. I understand and I know my dad, and I probably would have tried to figure that out. But what's really funny about that, how are numbers backwards? Because there's two ways they could be backwards. And all the planning, all the things that are there, something that just by chance we happen to be talking about, otherwise it would have been very problematic. So what I mean by numbers backwards is, did it mean, and I'm just using example numbers, 15, 38, 42 for the combination? Was the 15 the third set of numbers? So 15 was the third number, or was 15 the first numbers, but it was supposed to be 5-1?
Yeah, yeah.
So either way they could be. So when I asked my dad that, he laughed. He said, I don't know. I don't remember, because I keep it unlocked. With planning, there's so often that we were very fortunate that we had a conversation about it and we joked about it. But that emotion, just in that something so simple in that emotion could have been a difficult thing.
Yeah. I mean, that's a real important part, though, like passwords and safe combinations and keys and stuff like
sure.
that. That's conversations we need to have with our parents,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Or our loved ones, depending on
or,
who it is.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Or if it's you with your loved ones. Yeah, great
yeah,
point.
Yeah, with your spouse, yeah. So, okay, so let's move on then, and let's talk about our subject then today. So we're going to get into a little bit more about required minimum distributions and what that means at certain ages and in certain types of different accounts. So John, why don't you just give us a general definition of what is, we're going to call it RMD, or required
sure.
minimum distribution.
The government wants to tax you.
Exactly.
That's it. That's the simple answer.
That's the simple answer.
The government wants some money. I say that jokingly, but that's really the reality, right? We've reached an age in any retirement account, and I can't think of a better way of saying it, but a majority age, right? And that number has changed over time. It was 70 and a half a few years ago. Then it moved to 72. In 2023, it became kind of a tiered thing. It moved to 73. And then if you're born after a certain time period, it's 75. Mm-hmm. So the timing may change even in the future with the tax code. But what the minimum distribution is, the RMD, is we've been growing that money tax deferred for a long period of time, sometimes 30 years, right? Sometimes, you know, in that situation, the government simply says you've reached an age where whether you've touched this money or not beforehand, in each year for the rest of your life, you need to take a small portion out because we need the tax revenue. And I'm not saying the government is saying we need the tax revenue. They say it's, but realistically, it's because you have to pay some taxes on this money. That's really simply what the minimum distribution is. Is that a fair explanation?
Yeah. So what happens, especially now, a lot of people don't have pensions any longer. So a lot of times they are encouraged to, invest in either any type of retirement accounts, whether it's a 403B, IRA, 401K,
yeah,
457, SEP, et cetera. But what happens now is this money is tax deferred. So you get the tax deduction, you know, while you're working.
Sure.
You know, so again, if you're a 25-year-old, right, and let's say you got a $10,000 tax deduction that year because you put it into your retirement account. Now think about it. That person, if they're born after 1960, doesn't have to take it till 75. That's
so 50
years, right?
Yeah.
So let's say that $10,000, what could that grow to? You know, let's just say, you know, it doubles, you know, a few times by then, and every, you know, 10 years. Now, you know, we're dealing with, you know, six figures, right? When
right.
we're dealing with that. And
well,
so
I know we're using this as an explanation on stuff. That example is what we're going to work on today. keeping in mind that that might not be the best planning for everybody. There may be components where, hey, you're low enough in income, it should go into a into an after-tax account or a Roth IRA account.
Yeah, exactly right.
So
right.
Let's just make sure we're mentioning, we're using this as our example
today. As an example. Sure. But the point, I guess the point being is now is it's this oftentimes this tax ticking time bomb that has to be taxed eventually.
Yep.
And the government has been deferring it, you know, in our opinion or my opinion, kind of on purpose, because now it can grow even more and become a bigger tax burden later on down the road, so they get more taxes later on down the road.
Well, and keep in mind, our biggest percentage of our population is our baby boomers still, correct?
Yep.
Right? I don't think the millennials have passed them yet, if they have, but for this reference point, our boomers, that's where 401ks, that's pretty much when 401ks were created in the late 70s, early 80s, really, as they really started to become prevalent. That's when our boomers were starting to hit prime income earning years. And now that's the generation that's now hitting the 72, 73, 75 and having to take that money out. So that's the person that's primarily hearing this right now is, wait a minute, I have to take some money out. What's going on with that? And that's really the conversation today.
Well, and then how much?
Yes.
You know, so what does that look like, John? What does a typical, let's say, you know, 73, 75-year-old have to take out for the required minimum distribution?
So it what's really interesting about that is it's not a simple answer immediately, right? In past years, I could say to you, here's the exact calculation. Right. But the law has changed a little bit and adjusted what the percentage is. So let's use, for today's conversation, 73 as the starting point,
okay.
Right? So if we're using 73 as the starting point, the law is basically saying you have to take a percentage out. And there's different ways you can calculate it, but we should understand what they're calculating it off of. The starting point that you reference is December 31st of the prior year. So your first distribution, let's say it's 73, or you're taking a distribution at 78 or 80 or whatnot. It's December 31st of the prior year is what number they value it as. So the market could go up or down or whatever. That's the number they're referencing. That's the first thing. And when I say they, it's really the IRS, right? The IRS is who you have to answer to.
That's correct.
So December 31st is the number you're referencing. Then you're looking at all retirement accounts. Let's say you're 75 years old, all your retirement accounts, there's a value for each of them. You have to take out a percentage. And it's not a huge percentage. At 75, it's what, Mike? About it's actually close to about 4%, I think, right now.
Yeah, just I think 4% for argument's sake is a pretty good reference.
So you don't have to cash in your entire account, but you have to take that amount out, right? So you have to take that out before you file taxes the next year.
Yep.
Right? So you can take it out any day. You can take it out in one chunk. You can take it out monthly, quarterly, whatever. A lot of that is depending on your decision or your custodian. There's a total, right? So you have 12 different IRAs as an example. Maybe you have different investment ideas, right? In previous episodes, we've talked about bucket planning. You might have different IRAs in different buckets, right? We've referenced that. But you have to take out a total amount. So let's say the total amount you have to take out is $30,000. I'm just use $30,000. You can take $30,000 all out of one account, or you can take $10,000 out of three accounts, or you can take $5,000 out of six, right? You just have to total the amount.
What types of accounts do you have to take it from, John?
So when you become that age, it's anything that is a retirement-based account except the Roth accounts or the tax-free accounts, right? Those you do not have to take it out. But any other account, as you mentioned just earlier, 401k, a 403b, an IRA, and any of the derivatives of IRAs, a simple IRA, a SEP IRA, et cetera, any of the tax-deferred savings accounts generally, and you may be a person where you go, well, I don't have that type of account. I have a test fee, like Ford has the test fee. Well, it's still characterized as a 401k. The electrical union might have their tax sheltered annuity. Well, that still falls under the purview of a 401k. You know, so you might have a unique derivative or name of a retirement account, but they all fall under essentially the same purview of how that works.
Exactly. And just to kind of clarify what John said earlier is, if they're all considered IRAs or individual retirement accounts, you can consolidate and take it from any one of those IRAs. But if you have
great point,
you know, a separate account, let's say you do still have that, you know, test fee or that 401k, or you have a 403b, you have to actually take a separate distribution from that retirement plan. And so that's what oftentimes the advantage of rolling over your retirement plan to an IRA later on down the road is because you got more flexibility.
Yeah. And as we talk about this, we're kind of talking about two things. We're talking about the some of the actual implications of what happens, and then we're talking about planning, right? So so we're going to kind of merge these two conversations together. But yeah, a really, really good point for planning is you want to have as much control over when and how you take this as possible, right? It's a lot of times we will come across families, or you may be a family that is this way yourselves, where you're looking at it saying, I don't need that money.
Yeah.
You know, and now I just got to pay tax on money I don't necessarily need. And that's one of the things we teach people. We never want to pay taxes on money we're not using. But in this situation, planning might be important. So we're going to see that when we talk about RMDs and talk about that with families. A lot of it is if you need the money, you've probably taken it before you've reached 75, right? You might be taking money for income or whatnot anyway. This counts towards that. If you're taking out $3,000 a month, that's $36,000 a year, and your minimum distribution is 30, well, you don't need to take an additional 30, that 36 counted towards it, right? I think that's a key point to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it, you know, like you said, is timing, right? Because it's 1231 of the previous year is what it's based on, right? You know, a lot of times people don't really understand, you know, when's the best time to take it and how does it impact it? And one of the things that we run into sometimes as well is the fact that, you know, how is this invested? And so what's the best way to, where's the best place to take it from?
Yep.
And there's something what they call sequence of returns risk that we have to consider when we're dealing with this. And what we have to deal with here is the fact that the fluctuation of the value of that account. So let's say you just had a $500,000 IRA at the end of the year, and you take your distribution, you know, let's say it was in 2022 when the market was down almost 18% at the end of the year. And so now you have, you know, $420,000, let's say, instead of the $500,000, and then the government says you still got to take
your minimum distribution off of the $500,000 value.
The $500,000 value. So now you still got to take, you know, your $20,000 out, no matter what. And so now you're forced to sell at a loss. Okay, and so now it's a lot more difficult to get back up to that $500,000 again, right? And so it's just segmenting your assets, and that's what we talked about before in some of the bucket planning approaches as well, to position yourself to take your distribution from something that's not going to fluctuate in value if you possibly can.
There's a couple things that I would say on this when we talk about this, and I'm not trying to make people feel bad, right? I'm not trying to make people scared, but this is a subject that's so often not discussed when talking to financial advisors or financial planners.
Exactly.
There's a couple things. First, legally, if you don't take the RMD, it's no one else's fault but you. Mm-hmm. And that's scary, right? You can't say, oh, my advisor goofed this up. Well, maybe they did, but it's still your taxes that you have to file on, right? If you don't take the RMD, you can be penalized. And it's up to 50% of the amount you didn't take out, right? So if you had to take out $6,000 and you only took out $4,000, that $2,000 that you didn't take out, you could get a $1,000 excise tax penalty, right?
Yep.
So that's, and that falls on you. So you want to make sure there's good communication when talking with a financial person, as far as what are the steps we have to do and make sure it's done. Second, though, with it, like you just said, it's so often ignored what the pitfalls could be, because it doesn't sound like a lot of money. It's 4%. But over time, if you have the sequence of returns issue, yes, you needed to take out 4%. 4% of 500,000 is 20,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if the market's down at 420, or your value is down at 420, you're not taking out 4%. 20,000 off of 420 is now a higher percentage that you're taking out.
Yeah.
And that can really add up over time, Mike. It seems like something so simple and basic. We might meet a family that's experiencing this issue, and you talked about it, and they just, well, that's how it is. And you think, no, that's not how it is. That you can plan for these. You can have a proper way to do it to make sure you've made good decisions.
Yeah, strategic planning for required minimum distributions, I think, is something that's critical that individuals should do, that we oftentimes see as being missed by our industry, by some of the planners that are out there in general, I should say, or just some of the plans that people just do-it-yourselfers, they don't even think about it.
Very often do-it-yourselfers.
Yeah, so And the other thing that people don't realize is as you get older, so we talked about a 75-year-old may have to take 4% out, but it's based on your life expectancy.
Yes.
So as you get older, you have to take more each and every year.
Correct.
So what happens now is, you know, at 76, it may be, you know, 4.1 or 4.2. But as you get older, because it's based on your life expectancy, it starts to accelerate, you know? Mm-hmm. And so what happens now is when you start to get into your 80s, or if you're fortunate enough to make it to your 90s, you're now taking a much bigger amount out on a yearly basis. And so it may be 10% now instead of the 4%. And now the table does go up to age 115, so you never have to take 100% out, okay? But the reality of it is it becomes a bigger and bigger tax burden. And so what people don't realize, too, is now what are the tax implications, though, now, John, of taking these distributions out?
So it's interesting. So okay, it counts as ordinary income, deferred ordinary income, but it counts as if you had a job, right? So if you took out $30,000, you owe taxes as if you had a $30,000 job. And whatever that tax bracket that puts you into based on your income in that given year, right? The other tax burden on it is you can't do anything with that money until you pay the taxes on it. So in a weird way, like you can reinvest it if you want, but now depending on how you reinvest it, you might be paying taxes on that twice. You pay taxes when you took it out and then you reinvest it and that causes tax. So in previous episodes, you've heard us talk about Roth IRAs and Roth conversions. You can convert, not contribute, that's different. You can convert any amount of money you want into a Roth IRA, and then it's tax-free, but not your required minimum distribution.
Yeah.
So you can't say, oh, I got to take out 30, I'm just going to put that in my Roth. No, you'd have to take out 30 for the RMD and an additional 30. So now you got $60,000 worth of additional income in that given year. So the tax implications really can add up on this. And again, the government doesn't care. This is what they're counting on, is people not doing strategic planning for this, people not planning in advance for what this is going to look like. It's a huge, huge thing, because the government knows, I mean, we're talking trillions of dollars in retirement accounts, and we're talking, especially when we're referencing the baby boomers, them all hitting the majority age, the government is sitting back smiling, you know, going, yeah, we got a lot of revenue coming in.
Well, and not only that, John, yeah, it depends on whether they're joint taxpayer or single taxpayer,
sure,
too. And so oftentimes, you know, one of the advantages of having an individual retirement account is if you're married, if something were to happen to one of the spouses, the other spouse can continue it, okay? And that is a nice feature of it. But now what's happening is, if they're of age, they're still required to take a distribution as well.
Yeah.
And now they're paying taxes at a single taxpayer rate instead of a joint taxpayer rate. So that could add insult to injury as well.
For sure.
And so a lot of it is just putting together planning strategies in advance to avoid, if possible, it's not always possible, right, some of those tax traps that we see, especially in that required minimum distribution years.
Well, and as we talk about it, if we think about it this way, the planning for it, there used to be a different method of planning too. You used to say, hey, you have to start taking it out. The majority age used to be 70 and a half.
Yep.
I don't know why the half, but to be honest, but it was there.
Interesting. Yep.
But if you didn't use it, like you just said, it went to the spouse. Well, if neither of you used it all, and a dirty secret was that probably happened, there was still money left over, right? Because you didn't want to pay taxes on money you're not using. So you left it there. The family could stretch that, or the beneficiaries, I guess I should say, could stretch that tax footprint over their lifetime, which might be another 30 or 40 years. Well, that law changed too. So now it's only 10 years,
yes,
and 10 years post-death. So the strategic idea of planning for RMDs, you can't then just say, hey, it's going to be easier for my heirs, they're going to have it less. No, theirs is changed too. So a required minimum distribution on an inherited retirement account, whether it's a Roth IRA or traditional IRA or whatnot, it, different, you know, and how it classifies as a Roth, but you still have to take a required minimum distribution post-death on an inheritance. So that is something else that there should be some sort of strategic plan on, because you don't just want to say, oh, well, I got more tax burden for 10 years, right? I mean, that's something to keep in mind as well.
Yeah, so a lot of it is using some of that strategic planning, you know, while you're alive, to not only you know, lessen that tax burden for yourself, but maybe even for the next generation if you do it properly.
And we've talked about this in previous episodes. We more than love to talk to a person if you have questions on this now. There are plans you can do, whether it's doing some gifting strategies, whether it's doing some tax-free conversions to Roth, whether it's simply pulling the money out and maximizing your tax bracket each year, whether it's doing a qualified charitable distribution. There are strategies. Yes. We're telling you some of the pitfalls. There are strategies. Now, we can't give you exact strategies today because we don't know everybody, and you have to get to know your consumer and talk about that individually. But there are strategies. The key thing why we bring this subject up today is because we are running into more, at least myself, and I know you would say the same, like we're running into more and more families that haven't done any planning for this, and it becomes a burden, an undue burden that could have been planned for.
Yeah, or they're running into it and they're thinking about it at 72, you know, when they need to take it next year instead of thinking about it at 67 when they could have done something about
Absolutely.
It for a few years. So a lot of it is there's this planning time, you know, oftentimes between, you know, retirement and that required minimum distribution age. If you have that, if you're still not working during that period of time, where oftentimes you can improve your situation quite significantly, potentially. So that it's not such a tax burden at that required minimum distribution age.
And just to piggyback on that, it takes time.
Yes.
It takes time. It's not something like you said, 72 to 73. Yeah, you might be able to do some planning in that year, but you probably could have done more planning from 67 to 73, right? It takes time over a couple of years maybe to try and be as efficient as you can to do it.
Exactly. I think it's a good time to wrap up there John, right?
Yep, absolutely.
So let's talk about our next segment is Holistic Happenings. And this is where we talk about some of the stuff that we run into, you know, with some of the families that we deal with, or sometimes just in some of the general circumstances of our day-to-day job. But John, what are you going to chat about today in Holistic Happenings?
So it's really kind of piggybacking off our subject today. And so we've seen this, myself, I've seen this a lot this year where we've had one spouse pass away and the survivor spouse still has to rectify the retirement accounts going in their name. And what we're seeing a lot is what is our planning for the next few years? And where we've been fortunate from our planning perspective is a lot of these families, we're not just meeting them this year. We've known them and we've done a lot of the planning or we've organized it. But what's really interesting is when a spouse passes, let's be honest, in most situations, you're not happy about that, right? It's not generally the best part of your life, right? So in now maybe you're different, but for most people, it's not a great thing. So
absolutely,
but you didn't choose to be there. But in society, we reference you not as a single person. We reference you as a widower. That's the term we use in American society. Mm-hmm. But according to the IRS, you're now a single person. And so the tax change on that is really, really interesting. So what we're seeing a lot is the year the spouse passes, we have some, you still can file a married filing jointly. We have some final tax planning that we can be doing before the next year happens and they have to file single and the tax brackets change. Almost, in most situations, almost cut in half. But the we talked about RMDs, that RMD is the same amount, right? You didn't give away half the assets. You keep them all as the survivor. And so all of a sudden now we've seen a big thing. So from a holistic happenings situation, I've seen that. My team has seen that too often. I hate saying it this way, but too often this year, because that means a lot of people have passed away, but we've seen it a lot this year where we're now having to do that post-death planning and trying to organize stuff. And so it's very common where we saw it literally yesterday. We saw it in a family's eyes where they're sitting together and we have a surviving spouse and a child that were sitting with us. And they're the look in the eyes as far as the planning of the realization of, oh, that's what you meant while we were doing this. They were sad, they were frustrated, but they also, you could see the understanding of, that's why you guys kept harping on us to do this. And harping, I'm trying to say it nicely, but
yeah,
we were able to show them what would have happened and now what situation they're in. And it's just, and a lot of hugs and a lot of crying and things like that, as you know, during those processes.
Oh, yeah.
But a lot of, relief of saying, no, you're fine. We've already done this planning. You've been doing this, and this is why you did it. And so that's what we've seen a lot of this recently here. And honestly, we've seen it a few times in the last few weeks.
Well, yeah, and it's happening more to both of us, because with 30 plus years in this industry, and with you over 20 plus years in this industry as well, with the same company, we now, a lot of these clients we've had for you know, and we're dealing with the second and third generations now too, and having that peace of mind of knowing that the plan has been set, and that comfort of knowing that you know, they're dealing with enough emotionally, they don't need to have a financial burden as well.
Exactly. I think it's a really good a conversation point from the holistic side. It's where you'll hear from a lot of families that, hey, we cannot just have conversations on one subject matter. You don't have to go to 12 different people to talk about it. It's like, we've been talking about all these different parts together, and we can bring that holistic conversation together to talk about kind of each of those subject matters, or bring in the professionals to have those conversations, so you can try and make that difficult emotional time in life, you can at least try and take the worry out of that.
Well, and that's the difference between investment planning and holistic planning, right?
Absolutely, is
making sure that we have that full plan in place, and that they have a person to talk to. You know, sometimes, you know, it's a phone call, or have to do it by mail even, you know?
Right.
And so it's nice to be able to sit in someone's office and have that extra support to have that experience that we have as a firm, you know, to walk our clients through that.
We don't ever put ourselves, I don't think a lot of people sit around and go, ooh, what am I going to do when so-and-so dies, right? We don't want to think about that. It's not a fun subject matter, but it is something, it's hard to share that in front of a client and for them to get the impact until they feel it.
Yeah.
So trying to explain it today in this medium, and try and explain it and give that emotion, it's necessary, right? It's really, really important. My internal partner, Anthony, will say this to people all the time. He said, you know, who are you going to call on your worst day at 2 o'clock in the morning, and what are you going to share with them? And that's the stuff you want to at least have a plan for, because that's a big part of life, right? We're all going to face it.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, I think it's a good thing to wrap up right now then, John. I thank you for sharing that. I think that does sum up a lot of some of the planning part of what we do.
Sure.
Through the holistic planning process. Okay. If you do want to get a hold of us, again, it's fsa1.com, and our phone number is 1-800-977-9292. I'm Mike Wallace.
I'm John Sauger.
Thank you for listening to the Retirable Podcast. Have a great day.
Insurance products are offered through the Insurance Business Financial Services of America. Financial Services of America is also a financial services practice that offers securities products and services through AE Financial Services, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC. FSA is also an investment advisory practice that offers investment advisory products and services through Financial Services of America Advisors, a registered investment advisor. AEFS and FSAA do not offer insurance products. The insurance products offered by FSA are not subject to regulatory requirements and standards of care applicable to registered representatives, and are not subject to investment advisory requirements. AEFS, FSAA, and FSA are not affiliated companies. Any and all other services referenced are an outside business activity not offered through or supervised by AE Financial Services Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC, or Financial Services of America Advisors, a registered investment advisor. AEFS and FSAA and any other entities are all separate and not affiliated entities. FSA advisors may refer you to local CPAs for tax services, including our business partnership with FSA Tax and Accounting, and attorneys for estate planning services, including our strategic partnership with Benjamin T. Vader, PLLC, if needed, to coordinate and collaborate with you and your advisor on your holistic financial plan with proper written authorization. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. Any references to protection, safety, or lifetime income generally refer to fixed insurance products, never securities or investments. Insurance guarantees are backed by the financial strength and claims-paying abilities of the issuing carrier. This podcast podcast is intended for informational purposes only. It is not intended to be used as a sole basis for financial decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual's situation. FSAA and AEFS are not permitted to offer, and no statement made during this show shall constitute tax or legal advice. Our firm is not affiliated with or endorsed by the U.S. government or any governmental agency. The information and opinions contained herein provided by third parties have been obtained from sources believed to be reliable, but accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed by FSAA and AEFS. Please remember that converting an employer plan account to a Roth IRA is a taxable event. Increased taxable income from the Roth IRA conversion may have several consequences, including but not limited to a need for additional tax withholding or estimated tax payments, the loss of certain tax deductions and credits, and higher taxes on Social Security benefits and higher Medicare premiums. Be sure to consult with a qualified tax advisor before making any decisions regarding your IRA. Case number 348-8694, April 2024.